Okay, so I'm Melissa Height and I look after the Learning Technologies Group, which is where the OER projects are housed at Oxford. But the title of my presentation was What Can Your OER Do For You? And I think what I suppose the message I would like to say for this event, which is about being in it to win it, is that actually if you have a project like this going on, it's not just a learning technologies project, it's not even just a technologies project, it's actually a project that can hit a lot of institutional priorities in terms of marketing and outreach and strategy. And I mean, I'm not a marketing person, I'm a learning technologies person, but it's pretty clear to me that the learning technology initiatives that work in institutions are the ones that are in line with some business strategy of the institution that they want to do anyway, and that is meeting particular needs. So I think that our success at Oxford is largely, significantly down to the fact that we had Caroline's team from the Public Affairs Department with us from the very beginning of this project, and that we needed that support. We made sure that we had them involved in it from the beginning of going into iTunes U, and certainly with the move into OER material. And that it's her team and the working together with them that has got us this huge range of publicity that we have managed. So she has basically marketed and spun this project in a way that has got buy-in internally and externally for the project across the institution and across certainly from senior managers. So I think it's worth certainly spending time on that, which is what we're going to think about today. But I'm going to show you some examples. So obviously Caroline is coming later and we'll talk about Oxford and I can talk a bit about Oxford. But I wanted you to see some of the other ways that other institutions are putting this kind of activity at very high level and getting you to think about what messages it is that they're sending. So I'm going to play some videos, and so that my time will be taken up, I think, by the playing of the videos. But as you watch these videos, I want you to think, what is this piece of video doing for this institution? Which of their headlines are they hitting, and how are they making this activity sound like something that fits with their institutional strategy, and why have they made this fancy marketing video about it? Oops.
In the year 2000, an MIT faculty committee on lifelong learning proposed a program that was as straightforward as it was revolutionary.
The idea is simple, just to publish our teaching material, our course content, online, on the internet, and make it widely available to everyone who could use it for free.
OpenCourseWare, OCW, is MIT's web-based initiative that offers open access to the core teaching materials, syllabi, lecture notes, assignments, and exams from 1,800 courses, free of charge for educators and learners worldwide.
The idea that we came up with, OpenCourseWare, was really a revolutionary idea, particularly at the time, because in 1999, it was the heyday of the dot-com era, and everyone was thinking of a for-profit model. Although we considered it, we felt that for MIT, the right thing to do, the right model, is to give away the teaching materials.
Some faculty thought it was the dumbest idea ever, that MIT were giving away all their intellectual property to the world for free, and no one would use their textbooks anymore, no one would come to their classes anymore, etc., etc. And other people thought it was the best social good they'd ever heard of.
Through the generous support of the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, and the Ab Initio Corporation, MIT has published materials from virtually all MIT undergraduate and graduate courses on the OCW site, representing 33 academic disciplines. In addition to the core teaching materials, the site includes animations, simulations, and more than 1,000 hours of classroom instruction on video.
It's important to keep in mind that we are not offering MIT education through OpenCourseWare. So for example, you don't register for credits and you don't get a degree. A true MIT education is something where students come on campus, they live here, and they learn with fellow students and with the faculty.
More than 90% of the MIT faculty and hundreds of other MIT community members voluntarily share their knowledge and teaching materials on OCW, demonstrating the Institute's widely held commitment to openness.
A core value of MIT for a long time has been public service. We should be in the business of disseminating this knowledge to help, you know, the world. In a sense, that's what books do, right? So this is, if you want, is the modern equivalent of that.
In the 4 years since the site's launch, open courseware materials have been accessed by 35 million individuals from more than 220 countries and territories worldwide. Rogelio Morales, a PhD candidate at the Central University of Venezuela, is a metallurgical engineer and a licensed commercial diver. For Morales, OCW is a valuable resource for new information that improves underwater inspections and testing.
I often download information from different topics and give it to our professors. Sometimes we discuss the information. Other times they use the slides from the OCW site in class. It's a great resource.
I want to be part of OCW because I believe in the spirit of the thing. I think the concept is dead on right, and we don't feel proprietary about it. We want you to know what it is. We want you to be able to tap into it at some level, even if it's a fairly static level. And that's reason enough to do it, as far as I'm concerned.
At the University of San Carlos, Guatemala's center of higher education for more than 300 years, Professor Waleska Aldana Zagora teaches a course for physics instructors.
When you try to teach certain subjects and you don't have labs or equipment or any kind of visualization, the students end up lacking the expertise necessary for their future success as physics professors. The fact that MIT provides their materials without cost is simply extraordinary.
I think the most wonderful thing about this is that MIT was, in a way, almost to most people outside MIT, like the Forbidden City. They had no idea what happened inside. And with OCW, the bridge was lowered. They now see MIT in a completely different way.
Triatno Yudoharjoko, head of the architectural department at the University of Indonesia at Depok, was amazed that a university as renowned as MIT would give access to virtually all of its educational information. Harjoko believes that there is great value in MIT's free and open sharing.
It's not simply the information that's valuable, but also the glimpse OCW offers into how MIT has structured its teaching and research.
The reach of OpenCourseWare goes far beyond the site itself. Other organizations have now translated nearly 600 OCW courses into other languages, including Chinese, Spanish, Portuguese, and Thai. These translations have been accessed by 14 million visitors to date. There are also more than 100 mirror sites, locally hosted versions of the OCW site, in low bandwidth areas. The majority are located in sub-Saharan Africa.
I traveled to Africa and I found the people there were very receptive to OCW and the mission of OCW, which is to spread knowledge around the world. Many of the universities in Africa, they don't have books or the budgets are just really low compared to the United States, and so whatever little help they can get with setting up curricula or just more information about a subject, it really helps.
Another area that many of us had an aspiration for was that OpenCourseWare would not be just something that MIT does, but by setting an example and a model, it would become something that many other institutions would also do, not just in the areas that we are good at, like science or engineering or management, but in all kinds of fields of knowledge. And today there are over 150 universities around the world who are doing their own open courseware. And I think the dream that in fact open courseware would be truly a very, very broad-based movement that will impact knowledge, information, and education worldwide, I think it's coming to fruition even as we speak now.
OpenCourseWare has grown from a bold experiment to a global movement. With the complete MIT curriculum now available on the site, OpenCourseWare has reached an important milestone, but is only at the beginning of the journey. MIT will continue to enhance and update OCW materials, develop new programs and features, and collaborate with others seeking to share their own knowledge, helping to create a truly global network of open educational resources.
I came from a family. In fact, we were refugees in Hong Kong, somewhat sort of financially restricted with very few options. And when I grew up, I remember my father valuing education would bring home old second, third hand volumes of MIT books. I remember flipping these books and seeing the dome, the picture of the dome on the front cover, and just aspiring one day to go to MIT. And the fact that today I'm a professor at MIT and so forth, it's a testimony to the fact that MIT has an impact way beyond its immediate borders. And I think that's at the heart, in some sense, of the idea of OpenCourseWare, that an institution like MIT has a responsibility, has an opportunity to impact students way beyond our immediate walls in Cambridge.
MIT OpenCourseWare, unlocking knowledge, empowering minds.
With your marketing heads on, you can imagine the meetings that were going on in advance of putting that together, and they're hitting, it's a good thing to do, it's the right thing to do, it fits with our brand, but also protecting our brand. You know, it's not, you still come to face-to-face teaching, but there's international outreach, so there's many different things going on there. And that's the same kind of discussion that we've been having at Oxford in preparation for launching our material. So what is the context? Why is this important to Oxford? What's the brand? Where does it fit into our business? How does it meet Oxford's needs? So we've certainly been using the work as case studies to show a lot of things that Oxford needs to about our impact and our partnerships and our outreach and service to society and being engaged and so on. And being with Caroline's team working on our publicity and marketing, we've had coverage in all kinds of different media. So from this one when we launched to obviously this one, which you will be familiar with, which is pretty. Lucky to be working closely with Apple to get that kind of get our material into that kind of space. And a standard, if you did a brainstorm within your organization, and we've done them at some of our days, thinking about what the benefits, why do you do OER? You get this kind of sort of flip chart, post-it note collection. And I think that that's happening at lots of different institutions around the country because of these big funded programs. So partly what we have to do is figure out what the niche message for your own institution is now that MIT is already in this space and the space has been opened up. And it would be interesting to think about the collaborate to compete issues about whether we do all need to be working together or whether we're now trying to find uniqueness within this new space of lots of people giving OER. So this is the University of Nottingham talking about why they did it. So again, as you listen, think about the buzzwords and Nottingham points that they're hitting that are clearly part of their institutional strategy.
Universities are in the business of creating and disseminating knowledge, and historically that's been done through face-to-face contact and the printed word. Well, the internet's changed all that, and we've responded by taking advantage of the opportunities it provides in order to take what we generate here at Nottingham to a much wider audience, not just within the university but outside the university. So what UNOW does is gives us the opportunity to provide an alternative source of access to materials for our own students to complement what they do face-to-face in the classrooms and the labs, and to access materials remotely. So it provides a wonderful opportunity to take these resources that our inspiring educators produce to a much wider audience here in the UK and internationally. And of course, that's taking it to people who wouldn't otherwise get access to University of Nottingham resources. And if you go on the website, there's just a tremendous array of podcasts, videos, even whole modules. And one of the things I hope to do in the not-too-distant future is to put some of my own material on there from a year one course that I teach in the School of Economics on current issues in economics.
I think the thing about you now is that it allows us to interact with different groups internationally in a number of different ways. So, for example, prospective students can use you now to see what teaching and learning is like at the University of Nottingham. Partner universities in other countries can use the materials on you now to get a sense of what we do, and also, if they find them helpful, to use them in their own teaching. So I think in that sense, you now is very much consistent with what we say our international strategy is. It's knowledge without borders.
Proud of what we do with our teaching and learning, and I think there's a lot we want to share with the world and show the world. And YouNow is a core part of that. It's a window on our activities. It gives people a chance to have a look at what we do in the lecture theatre, or how students might work with a tutorial or an essay or something like that. It gives people outside a sense of what we do in the classroom, and I think that's something that hasn't always been the case in the past. I think this is a prime example of opening up some of the boundaries around the university, and that's important to us. Technology can be a barrier, there's no question. People can be quite frightened of it, but generally speaking, it's very simple to use, generally speaking, mainly because technology has advanced so much, but also because we've got so much help around the campus to support people who want to do whatever, whether it's podcast, video, or just using the computer more efficiently for their teaching. But my experience was that, yeah, initially I was a little wary, a little technophobic, but once you have a go, and I think that's the key, you're away, and it makes life very interesting, very exciting, and the students respond to it very well, and that's always the pleasing part, and therefore it makes it hugely important as part of the next step in teaching and learning.
So in that one, you've got, so that's the Vice-Chancellor talking about institutional level international strategy, and I'm pretty sure it's Nottingham that has the campus in China. So there's certainly some university that was, you know, very much about that internationalisation, but also we're proud of our teaching and it lets people see what's going on here. So reassuring everybody that this isn't sort of distance learning or online delivery or changing something. So there's clearly some internal reassurance that is being done in that video as well for staff to work within the University of Nottingham to see how that fits with what our business. And he opens with universities are in the business of creating and sharing knowledge. So he's hitting a lot of different hooks, which are probably quite similar. And in both of those videos, there's lecturers talking about their actual teaching and little case studies of how people might learn from the material, which I think helps people to understand what this is about. And this next one is an Oxford University lecturer talking about why he did it. And I think it's these sort of individual stories about why lecturers are doing it that seem to be a lot of the marketing material, the quotes that the newspapers seem to be interested in as the quotes from lecturers as to why they did it. Oops.
For a few years now, I've been recording my English lectures, which are the ones I give in the first term, to first-year students. And I started off by just using a small little device in my pocket and picking up the audio, and then I used to capturing it on a computer. And at first I just put them on the university's VLE, and then I moved to putting them on iTunes and then iTunes U and making them available to the world. The reason I did it in the first place was because students in the term at Oxford find it very difficult to get to lectures. It's a very packed term over 8 weeks. And some students were saying they couldn't get to my lectures and did I have any notes. So what I decided to do was record them and put them up on the internal university website. And the feedback I got from the students was very, very positive. Not only did it mean that if they'd missed the lecture, they could catch up, but also those who attended the lecture meant that they didn't have to concentrate on note-taking during those 50 minutes, but they could listen to the lecture, engage with it, and then go back, listen to the recording and work through the handout and just go back over points they didn't quite understand. Students also used it as a revision aid, and I did notice a lot of downloads as we approached the exam period in the spring term. The next stage I decided to do was to put the material up on iTunes and iTunes U and make it freely available for the world. It was a bit of an experiment. I had no idea if anyone would listen to these or download them at all. And before I knew it, I was suddenly in the top 10 of podcast downloads worldwide. And I started to get emails from people all around the world who were thanking me for making these lectures available and said that it sparked their interest in this subject. And I was getting comments from people in academia, but also people in the general public. In the States, there was a mechanic who wrote to me, listened to it in his car engineering workshop. I've had people who said that they listened to it on their train journey or in the car journey. I recently had someone from the Premier League in football just said they listened to it in the office in their lunch break. And it was really quite humbling to see all the people who were listening to this material all around the world.
And the last one I want to play is Martin Bean, who's Vice-Chancellor of the Open University, talking about what Open University's strategy is. And Martin Bean joined Open University from Microsoft, so certainly has a commercial background.
If you think about iTunes University, we've just had our second birthday, I believe. The Open University, very early front runner with iTunes University. We've just crossed our 16 millionth download, not hit, not visit, download of Open University content through iTunes University. We're getting somewhere in the vicinity of 342,000 downloads a week right now. And we're constantly in the top 5 to 10 titles on iTunes University. But get this, UK folks. 88% of that traffic is outside the United Kingdom. My marketing investment in iTunes University is basically zero. And 1 in 18 of those 350,000 odd per week come to my website. So step back from that and think about it on a few dimensions. Think about it from the great good you get to do by actually delivering wonderful content to people in ways that they want to consume it, but also think about it from a marketing perspective and a cost-effective marketing perspective. Think about it for those of you that have global aspirations and where your university or higher education institution or further education institution wants to go in terms of exposing people to your experiences on a worldwide basis. And you'll start to see why the Open University is getting very excited about these megaphones, because it's not just about video snippets or podcasts. What you're seeing on the screen behind me right now is an application that we're working on, which is actually a virtual microscope that we'll be releasing soon. And in a minute here, that's actually a piece of Mars you're looking at right now that we've put on the microscope. And you'll start to see how that can be played with and rotated and annotated and other things. We have people in a volcano right now. My insurance company is not very happy with me at the Open University, but we have people in a volcano right now that are doing, this volcano is in reach of cell phone towers. So we actually have the ability to do real-time uploads of data directly out of the volcanoes that are feeding active collaborative experiments and experiences of students back in the UK and around the world, all to a mobile device. You start to think about devices such as the much-expected iPad and other devices that allow for this sort of proliferated experience, and you can start to see how these megaphones of informal learning today, many of us in the room may just see as a bit of a distraction or a cute thing off to one side. We don't view it that way at all. We actually believe that what we're seeing is a shift, a direct shift in what you can do to excite and inspire people in the informal world and move them to the formal. If you think about something that Tim talked about in his opening remarks, I think another major trend that everybody needs to be focused on is the open education resource movement. We were one of the first, with the help of the Hewlett Foundation, to bring up our OER. It's a platform called OpenLearn. We've had over 10 million users of that platform now. We take real, full Open University courses and we move them into the OpenLearn environment. Not only is it about their ability to consume and to commune, we've put a whole set of open tools up there as well, including full video conferencing to bring up virtual classrooms, mind mapping tools to be able for students to make sense of what they're doing, a mix and match area for educators to take Creative Commons content and repurpose it and remix it. Malcolm and Jisk have been unbelievably supportive of working with us around not only our own OpenLearn platform, but what we're doing more generally in the open environment. And you know what? I believe that what we're seeing is something truly fantastic, because the grape of all my 25 years at the intersection of technology and education, every single research study that I did said the great promise of technology in education was to drive up cost-effective access to a high-quality education experience. And that's what OER is doing for us. And it's not just doing it, by the way, sitting here in the UK or Australia or the United States or other places in the world, but the power of openness is having a profound impact in some of the world's great challenges. Our TESSA program, Teacher Education in Sub-Saharan Africa, is well on the way to training 500,000 primary school teachers in Sub-Saharan Africa to help them meet their Millennium Development Goals of full primary school attendance. UNICEF just gave the Open University a $4 million grant to work in Ethiopia, still based on our OER model of being able to train primary care workers to attend childbirthing, to dramatically cut the tragic rates of mothers dying in childbirth and infant mortality rates in childbirth. All of these things are made possible because of the work that we've all done in the development of OER. And again, what we're seeing is it's becoming, again, one of these great movements or megaphones of informal learning around the world. Now, the interesting thing about OpenLearn for us, again, for the more businessy-minded people in the room that are saying, how the heck does he get to spend all that money on this stuff, is that we know at a minimum at least 6,000 students who joined us through OpenLearn have gone on and been influenced to enroll in our courses at the universities.
So he's clearly hitting business models. If you saw that many people in the audience, and those are senior decision makers, that's the JISC conference, it's people coming to find out, how can I persuade my institution, how can I market, what benefit will this actually bring to me? And he's showing these numbers. And also, the size of the kind of numbers he's talking about, when sometimes within OER projects people say there's very little evidence of reuse, and I think we start to get sort of over-concerned about that, in that there's lots of evidence of use in different contexts, because, and that's all those people who are downloading the material. So whether there's evidence of people changing and adapting material and remixing it and mashing it up with other material and cutting it and putting it into different shapes, I'm not sure, but there's certainly evidence of use and use in a different context, and to me that's reuse outside its original context. So. At JISC, and Lisa can certainly point you to more and more material that is coming out of the big JISC projects, they are starting to group. They're trying to evaluate the benefits of various things that have been going on as part of the OER project, and they're sort of grouping these under headings, which I think will come up again later in the day as we go through. So particularly sort of these headings about individual showcasing, institutional showcasing, and capacity building within your institution, so getting people upskilled and ready and able to use the technology and increasing people's interest in uses of technology. So I think that's something that all the learning technologists are quite keen on. But that, and the institutional showcasing is something that the marketing departments and the senior managers are quite interested in. Individual showcasing, it is all about those lecturers sharing and showing their material and making that difference to learners that they can identify with. The share and share alike heading is particularly to do with some of the projects that have been going on where getting academics in the same discipline area to share and look at each other's materials has brought great benefit to the teaching in that area. And then a lot of people hitting buttons on sort of sustainable teaching, sustainable education, how can we keep this activity going, but also internal self-discovery. Who knew we had all this material? Who knew we had all these areas? So a lot of institutions finding benefits in discovering pockets of activity within their own institution that are able to be celebrated and used. And then there is this other one, which is about ethos and the greater good. And quite a few of those videos were hitting that kind of, it was the right thing to do. It was something I wanted to do. And that's certainly something that we hear from the Oxford academics about. It's, of course, I want to do it. It's not so much the individual showcasing as just, of course, that's the right thing to do. I want to. And I could go on a bit, as you probably know, about the role of public intellectuals and intellectuals in public life, but I shan't because I've got 0 minutes. But for us just locally, I think it's probably quite important to be thinking about a lot of this stuff in the context of, this is, you can't see that because of the sunshine, but this is the occupation of the Radcliffe camera and the police, that's the high visibility police vests going up the stairs into the Radcliffe camera. And I think that more and more we need to think about what universities are for, what our business is, and what role we play in society. So, because things are getting a bit heated and the climate is changing. So thank you very much. And I think we will probably return to lots of those things during the day, but just to let you see how institutions are marketing this material and hitting quite high level hooks with it. So thank you very much.